So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to Review.
Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant, as you know, Vanna, receiving a bye in the first round. They're going to be kicking it off in round number two because of what happened on February the 5th. Who do you like in this one?
Hulk.
You do like Hulk.
I do like him. He is so nice. I've been talking to him. He's terrific. I like
him. Boy, I hope you haven't distracted him going into this big match with Andre the Giant.
I don't think so.
All right, Vanna White. Also in round number two, the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, thanks in part to Andre the Giant, has advanced. He is going to be going against The Rock, the Magnificent Morocco. Who do you like in this one, Vanna White?
I have to tell you something. I don't know about the Million Dollar Man. I don't like anybody buying anything for anything. You know, you have to work for it. I don't like people trying to dish out money to win something.
All right. He tells me that everybody has a price. A surprise here, Greg the Hammer Valentine advancing. He's going to be going against the Macho Man, Randy Savage. Quickly, Vanna.
Randy Savage.
You like Elizabeth?
I think she's terrific.
I
like that, a woman person behind him. That's what they need, and she's doing a great job, and they make a great team.
All right. And the one-man gang receives a bye in the first round, as you could very well see. Jake the Snake and Ravishing Rick Rude going the full 15 minutes on that one. It is exciting. The championship elimination tournament part of WrestleMania 4. Vanna White and myself are going to be back with more results a little later on. Right now, let's get back to Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse the Body Ventura.
Welcome to Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting coming at you from the Review Away studios. Mr. Ting, how are you?
I'm here.
You are here. You are drinking pop.
I'm drinking a root beer.
Root beer.
I went to Harvey's for lunch.
Oh, nice. What did you get?
The Great Canadian Burger.
Was it great?
It's great, and it was Canadian.
No, that's good. Don't they have Harvey's in the States now? Do they?
Don't think so.
Maybe not.
Yeah.
I really like Harvey's. Harvey's is very good.
It's good, yeah. It's close by. We actually received gift certificates from Christmas, you remember?
Oh, yeah. We did. I've never used those.
Yep.
We can use them at multiple places, like a Kelsey's, Swiss Chalet, I think, is on there.
Yeah, Milestones.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
How much is on those gift cards?
$50.
$50?
Yeah, man,
really?
So I'm pretty much getting five lunches paid for.
Oh, shit.
So thank you, Fight Network.
That's great. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
There's not that many places in our area, I find, to go for lunch. I usually just bring my lunch now in. There's
plenty of places here.
Eh. There's Harvey's.
Anything you want. There's sushi. There's, like, Vietnamese. There's Middle Eastern food. There's, like, rotisserie chicken. There's a lot of food. Like, there's pizza. There's even, like, a booster juice. There's a supermarket here. A metro where you can get a variety of different foods.
Why are you trying to shoot down my statement so harshly?
I'm surprised because you live here, actually, John. You live like
yeah. I don't walk around this area though too much, so
okay.
I need to clearly follow in your path of finding places to go for lunch.
Just walk.
I just know of Harvey's and that place we've gone to, the Vietnamese place.
There are a lot of other restaurants. You just walk around.
You know what I really miss is at our old office, that place we used to go for pho. That was the best.
No, pho.
Pho. Sorry. Pho.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
I loved that place. It was great. I went there once a week.
It's okay.
Sometimes I went by myself. That, to me, is the true measure of how good a food place is, if I'm willing to go there by myself and eat.
Is it as good as Pad Thai from the Green Room?
Oh, geez. Pad Thai from the Green Room. That was the gold standard at one point.
I think it's a weird standard.
Why? It was excellent.
Because the Green Room was actually shut down. It's like a known place.
That was after a shift.
To be the dirtiest place in Toronto. Like, I've seen rats run around.
You have not seen rats.
I actually have seen rats run around there. I have. And they were shut down for health violations. And places rarely get shut down for health violations.
I don't believe you saw a rat there.
I fucking... Yeah, especially in that patio, I saw rats.
Oh, well, it's outside. I mean, rats... Where else do they roam?
No, I've even seen rats, like, inside that place.
Why are rats viewed as, like, this dirty animal and, like...
Because they...
Like birds. Why aren't birds, like,
they
you?
Pigeons are.
Think
absolutely.
Of the foot and mouth disease you could get from a bird sitting on
pigeons,
your...
Pigeons
on your
are
food.
Disgusting. I think people...
But rats are... Oh, my God, a rat.
People are, oh, my God, pigeons.
You know? No one ever says that to a pigeon. No one's
sure
ever freaked out to the extent of a rat.
Okay, well, maybe they don't freak out. You're right. They probably don't, you know, if they see pigeons, they're not like, oh, shit, We gotta run away.
A rat has such a negative connotation to it as well.
Well, because, yeah, because
like, don't be a rat. Don't be a pigeon.
Sure. What?
It doesn't carry the same weight.
But rats, they're probably more likely to run around kitchens in your home to infest your home, bring in disease into your home.
I once went to this restaurant on Queen Street where you had to walk through the kitchen to get to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Just walk by. Is there like just where the cooks are?
Yeah, I think that's ridiculous. I think that's there are some Chinese restaurants that are like that too that are just disgusting.
You've never worked at a food restaurant, have you?
No.
It's an experience I recommend for everybody.
Where have you worked?
Well, I worked at Pizza Hut at a movie theater. I worked there for a number of years. It's not really a restaurant. You know, it's like a fast food
still
setup.
A kitchen, yeah.
It was gross. There was I think I've told the story before of one time because it was a half Pizza Hut, half New York Fries, and there was.
How does that work? Like, what did they just share the?
Well, I think it was
because there are a lot of those. They're like a combo Taco Bell and KFCs here in Canada.
Yeah, well, some of them like Cara Foods operated both Swiss Chalet and Harvey's, and that's why you had all those combinations together. I don't really know what
but
the ownership situation is.
But in terms of the inside, like do they they must share like freezers and just share?
Yeah, you would split the space in the back, and then just like one side was Pizza Hut, one side was New York Fries. We would actually get. You'd be shifted to either work New York Fries or Pizza Hut, but it was expected you work both. Like
right.
You just make whatever. So anyway, we get like a thing of potatoes one day at New York Fries, and part of it is you get this whole stack of like, it's like 30 pounds of potatoes, and you have to cut them into fries, like with a fucking fry maker thing. And you also have to cut them if there's like weird shit on them and just dirt and stuff like that.
Okay.
And I cut open this potato, and these white things crawl out of it into the water.
Oh,
these little maggots.
You've ruined fries for me forever. Not just
our head person, our food inspector comes by, and I alert them of this as I'm throwing these potatoes out. And they're like, "Why are you throwing the potatoes out?" And I'm like, "I just opened this, and some maggots crawled out." And she's like, "Which potato? Where was it?" And I point here to the corner of the box where it was. It's like, "Oh, well." Just get rid of the ones around it. Don't get rid of the whole box. You're so cheap. I got rid of the whole box. Don't worry, folks.
Well, good for you, John. I appreciate that. And I hope there are more people like you. Oh, God. I don't think I could ever eat at New York Fries or at Pizza Hut.
I don't think I ever ate worse than when I worked there because I'd make a pizza for myself every day when I'd go on my lunch break.
Yeah.
And we'd also like just get these like small cups and we'd just go up to the pop thing and just fill it. Like I used to drink pop at that point in my life. Terrible as I look back at what my intake was.
Now you moved on to coffee and energy drinks.
I honestly eat way better, 100% better than I did 10 years ago.
So did you ever make like weird pizzas for yourself?
Absolutely, because we'd have all the toppings there. I would just go to town. My friends were more insane. They once made a poutine pizza.
Doesn't sound so bad.
It's gross. Like poutine on top of a pizza with toppings. They used to get stuff and deep fry it because we had a fryer there.
Mm-hmm.
I used to have to clean those fryers. It was disgusting.
What would they fry? Outside of potatoes.
There was one time they actually bought like frozen chicken from like the Loblaws that was downstairs and came upstairs and they deep fried it.
Wow.
We had a lot of time on our hands. It wasn't the most successful theater, so there was a lot of downtime.
Yeah.
I did so much reading in the back. I'd bring like my observer to the back and just read it.
Okay.
That was a day I was making money for just sitting around and doing very little.
That's what I do.
At times. But sometimes it would get very busy and it was overwhelming.
Right.
Making food for people, dealing with idiot customers who we had to always refer to as guests. They're not customers. They are your guest.
Yeah.
And you had to give a four-finger point. They wouldn't let you point with one finger.
What?
It was weird like WWE shit.
You're not allowed to point with one finger.
Yeah, you can't point with one finger. You point with four because someone down might think you're pointing at them in an accusatory manner, so you have to use four fingers to say, washroom is that way.
What the hell is the difference with four fingers?
Well, if I go like this to you...
Yeah? That's even more offensive.
Is that aggressive?
That's like a blade.
But if I go like this, like Hulk Hogan, you...
No. Four fingers is like you want to chop me or something.
Yeah.
Like that,
to this day, I still point like this just out of habit.
That's weird.
Like they brainwash you at a young age and they instill this stuff into you.
It's like a creepy, knife gesture.
I guess so.
You want to stab me.
Yeah, something like that. It was a fun job, though.
Yeah, sounds like it.
I'm trying to think of anything else ridiculous that happened. But anyway.
It's pretty ridiculous, man.
Did you work in high school?
Only in the summers. I worked in a daycare, actually.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Every summer?
No. Just maybe, like, for a couple weeks. My mom used to, like, bring me to these music camp things. Like, my mom's a teacher, right? And so
she
would go to these music workshops with other teachers. And I used to be in the daycare. I used to, like, you know, as a kid. And then, like, I just hung out with her this year. And she ended up getting me a job working in the daycare this year. And it was... I just ended up playing with the kids. Like, I was probably the least responsible person there.
Did you get along with kids, or did it get tiresome?
Because I was still a kid myself. I was, like, probably, like, I don't know, probably, like, 14 mm-hmm. or so, or 13 maybe. And I just felt like a kid myself. I'm not going to change any diapers. Like, I left that to the girls. Yeah.
Well, that sounds fun. Yeah. It would have driven me nuts. Kids crying all the time and yelling and...
Yeah, it's not that bad.
Would have worn on me.
No, you get used to that, I'm sure.
The yelling and the crying. Maybe becomes
with
like
kids. I mean, if you have kids in the future,
it's just like it's just background noise. At one point, you just expect it. Your brain adjusts to it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm trying to think of a segue. There were no babies crying in the audience because there was no sound coming from the audience at WrestleMania 4.
Oh, not bad. Pretty good.
This show, Mr. Ting, had you ever watched it before?
No. I haven't. I wasn't watching wrestling at this time.
Neither was I.
Actually, I wasn't in the country at this time.
Where were you?
I was in Hong Kong.
Oh.
Yeah.
Not getting WrestleMania 4.
Nope.
No. Shut out.
Yeah.
Well, WrestleMania 4 is a show that I am sure we're going to get lots of feedback from people who love this show, and it is purely because of nostalgia, because there's no other reason to love this show.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, not just nostalgia, but I imagine when you're a child, you don't watch for things like match quality. You probably just go in hoping that your favorite wins, and if your favorite wins, you leave home happy.
I must have rented this WrestleMania so many times when I was a little kid from the local Rogers Video.
Oh, just this one?
This one was so big. It was a double video where they attached the two tape cartridges together with an elastic, and it was like you had to pay like a dollar extra because it's a double tape. And Jesus. I was like, wow, this is a long show even at that age. Mm-hmm. And I just always remember watching this. I always have loved tournaments. I find one night tournaments, whether it was when I was renting like UFC shows early on or this, I love the idea of, you know, all these people start out, and by the end of the night, we have a winner. It's like a self-contained one-night story with a beginning and an end.
Not only that, but, like, every match has some weight to it. Every match has consequences leading directly into the next match.
And it's like it's just taking from regular sports. I just like this. The way they had the brackets in the back. I mean, I love the concept. It was one of the reasons I hated that they got rid of the King of the Ring. I like that idea of, you know, one night, it's like even if you're not following the product, this is an easy to watch show because you know everything that's built up beforehand is everyone's going for this title and you're going to see everything in one night. It's all, you don't need any backstory really. The title's vacant. That's all you need to know. So this, of course, was set up after the main event, which we reviewed last week when Andre the Giant defeated Hulk Hogan by nefarious means using heel referee Earl Hebner. And the title was then vacated when he tried to give it to Ted DiBiase. And that set up the 14-man tournament. Why 14? Because Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant would be having a rematch on this show, but they would kick off the second round. They each got first-round byes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So that kicked off our 3 hour and 36 minute event. And I warned you, Wei, on Sunday afternoon, get ready. This is a long one.
Yeah, I didn't start this till late Sunday night, and I was prepared for it.
Yeah, you know? I try for the ones where it looks daunting. I try to give you a
thank you.
Get your head into the right space.
I appreciate that, but we're used to this length of WrestleMania now.
I guess so. Yeah, the typical WrestleMania is this length now.
Honestly, like this was a piece of cake because I mean, Raws are 3 hours long.
They were bound and determined to get every single performer on this show.
Did they though? Oh, I guess in that Battle Royal.
A 14-man tournament, and then more matches on top of it.
Yeah.
There was no shortage of talent on this show. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Sunday, March the 27th, 1988, which was a very famous date. Wrestling fans will remember it was Super Sunday, where that year TBS decided to counter WrestleMania and go head-to-head with them by putting on a free Clash of the Champions, the very first Clash of the Champions, which featured the now famous match between Ric Flair and Sting, where they went to a 45-minute time limit, and it's really credited as the match that made Sting. And this was all in retaliation to the prior fall, when the NWA was going to put Starrcade on pay-per-view, and the WWF decided, we're going to do a pay-per-view that day called Survivor Series, and we're going to go to all the pay-per-view providers that have committed to Starrcade and say, you cannot carry both of our events. It's either us or them. And if you don't carry Survivor Series, you fuckers aren't getting WrestleMania next year.
Ooh,
so wow. Some bullying tactics by the WWF, not exactly being stars in 1987 or 88. But that's what set up what I would say is kind of a precursor to what we have now, where WrestleMania weekend is the biggest weekend of the year for just about every promotion out there now in the area. But I would have, if I was watching wrestling at this time, I would have been so excited, provided I had a VCR so I could watch both of these.
Yeah, and you know, these days people aren't really competing with WrestleMania. They're just piggybacking off of the audience.
Yes, very true. Very true distinction.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we're ever going to see anyone go head-to-head with WrestleMania.
Mm.
In a weird way, we kind of got it a few years ago when the UFC ran a pay-per-view the night before, mm-hmm. which you could say was somewhat competition for WrestleMania and was the lowest WrestleMania number in quite a number of years.
How did that UFC do?
UFC did very well. That was the George St. Pierre Dan Hardy fight.
Oh, okay.
And it was something like WrestleMania did 850,000 and UFC did like 720,000 in that neighborhood.
And isn't New Japan having a show?
New Japan is doing a show this year, but it'll be early Sunday morning, so it won't be head-to-head with WrestleMania, but very, very busy weekend. Mm-hmm. I might be waking up Sunday in our hotel at 5:30 a.m. to watch New Japan.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I figure I'm just going to make Sunday the most ridiculous day ever.
I don't think you'll be the only one, especially like where we're staying. I'm sure people might even have a
party. Maybe we should get a viewing party in the lobby.
Oh, yeah.
That would be fun.
Mm-hmm.
See if anyone would join us.
Yeah.
You, me, and we'll get...
I'll be sleeping. I won't be there.
No?
I don't know.
You've got to, Ed. Come on. You got to host.
I'll probably be there.
We'll all gather around my laptop.
Yeah.
Us and half of WrestleCon.
Okay. Done.
Could be fun.
Done.
Have you taken a look back at the schedule since that time?
No. I'll wait for it until it comes.
Well... that's for another day. Let's chat about WrestleMania 4 here. This was the pay-per-view that was airing that night as opposed to the free television special. What would you have done, Wei? Would you have ordered this pay-per-view or have watched Ric Flair and Sting for free on television if you were, say, right now, and it was all things were equal, you could only watch one, we don't have technology to PVR, and you had to make a decision. I'm either going to plop down my money for WrestleMania or I'm going to watch a two-hour Clash of the Champions special.
To me, WrestleMania is always kind of more special. It's like it really is the Super Bowl of pro wrestling, at least to me. And I was always a bigger WWF fan anyway, so I'd probably pay for WrestleMania.
I think I would have done the same, especially comparing it to WrestleMania 3 the year prior. You probably went in with, you know, heightened expectations. Like maybe the first one or two WrestleManias, they were big shows, but 3 to me was when it really solidified itself as, you know, the big, big show to go out of your way to see.
Yeah, so did you find it odd that they would choose a much smaller venue for this?
Well, the deal going into this was that this was the first time that they actually got a site fee at the Trump Plaza. Like, they actually gave WWF money to bring the show here to Trump Plaza, and I'm sure that someone offset it. Because you're right. You're following up the Pontiac Silverdome with Boardwalk Hall here, the home of... some early Zuffa UFC pay-per-views.
Oh, is that right?
This is where Tito Ortiz fought Evan Tanner.
Oh, wow.
So there you go. But yeah, I agree. I found this to be a very kind of boring kind of building with a lame kind of crowd throughout the 3.5 hours.
Yeah, but could you really blame them, though? Not all of these matches were that spectacular, and there are a lot of them.
That's an understatement. Yeah. Not a lot of these were too spectacular. We had the opening World Wrestling Federation, What the World is Watching, with our announcers Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse Ventura. And then Mean Gene Okerlund's in the ring. They introduce Gladys Knight to sing America the Beautiful. And then the officials bring out the trophy for the Battle Royal. And Ventura says how excited he is because tonight he doesn't have to talk to Vince McMahon. That's a great mood setter for Ventura. And Monsoon says this will be the greatest wrestling extravaganza of all time, and it was his first of many descriptions that this was a happening. That's a comment. Now, Michael Schiavello has adopted that for a lot of his broadcasts.
Oh, wow.
Have you seen his highlight reel from over the weekend?
Yes, I have.
Oh, man.
What is it called?
There was a fighter whose last name is like M-E-I-N-U-S, Manus. But throughout the highlight, it's Manus on top of him. Manus bleeding all over Chavez's chest. And it's like this two-minute reel that like Deadspin has now picked up. And Chiavello's like retweeting it. And
oh, it's hilarious.
He's writing that. A very unfortunate name to commentate. I agree. And it's just like, so I feel like I'm 12 years old giggling at it, but it's so funny.
I'm positive he did it on purpose. You know, he played it up on purpose. At one point, he's like, a guy, he has like the guy in an armbar, and he actually says like, he's pulling it now out of his anus. Like he said his anus. He didn't even say my anus. So it's no doubt he was playing it up.
I couldn't have called it with a straight face if I realized how it sounded.
Oh, he was excellent.
He's a Michael Schiavello. Something else. And who was a giant WWF fan at this time, growing up. Bob Uecker joins him. He was a celebrity at WrestleMania 3, brought back here, as they noted. It was the first time his option was ever renewed. And then Monsoon, once again, it is a happening. And what was happening was a battle royal to kick things off with a bunch of guys here. We had the Hart Foundation, the Young Stallions, Sika, Danny Davis. Can you believe Danny Davis has worked more WrestleManias than Jerry Lawler? Because he worked WrestleMania 3 and then this Battle Royal. So he's got two WrestleMania matches on his resume. The Killer Bees, Bad News Brown, Sam Houston, the Rougeau Brothers, Ken Patera, Outlaw Ron Bass, the Junkyard Dog, the Bolsheviks, Harley Race, Hillbilly Jim, and George the Animal Steel, who was just on the floor to call this. And Uecker joined them on commentary and mentioned how Vince McMahon called him to come back to WrestleMania, which was years and years before Vince McMahon was acknowledged as the guy running this entire thing.
Right.
Bob Uecker breaking some kayfabe there. Sam Houston was the first one out. George Steele, he just remained on the floor. Bunch of eliminations here. They had cops here at ringside as security, armed cops.
You never know what could happen in a battle royal.
Ventura says how we are down to 10 guys, and Monsoon then contradicts him, saying, no, I think there's no more than 7 in there, to which I counted 11. Uecker was just fitting in here as many baseball references as he possibly could. That was his gimmick here. It looks like the last day of cut day. I wonder what their per diems are. Were you a Bob Uecker fan?
I thought he was going to call this whole show when he came out here. So I was not looking forward to this.
But. No. Basically, it came down here to the Bolsheviks and Ken Patera were knocked out together. Then Harley Race eliminated Jacques Rougeau. Then JYD slaps Race, who just takes a bump over the top rope, and it's down to Bad News Brown, Bret Hart, and Junkyard Dog, all alumni from Stampede Wrestling.
That's right.
Represented here in the final three. And Bret and Brown work together, and they make a plan. And Ventura calls this a typical Saturday night in Harlem. And together they eliminate the Junkyard Dog, act like they are co-winners, and raise their arms when Brown hits them with my favorite name for a finisher at the time, the Ghetto Blaster. The Ghetto Blaster to the back of the head, which was like this jumping like scissors kick to the back of the head, like Kofi Kingston's Trouble in Paradise, kind of, okay. But to the back of the head. And tosses Bret out at 9:45 to win the Battle Royal. And they present him with the big trophy that Ventura notes will jump him up in the WWF standings. And then Bret attacks him, tries to break the trophy, and tosses it to the floor. And Uecker says that's why he never wanted to be the MVP. And they state the Hitman got double-crossed by Bad News Brown.
Yes.
The original Bret Hart screwjob.
Oh, there you go. You know, this is just pretty straightforward. There wasn't much drama, I felt, built through any of this. I mean, at the end when Bad News turns on him, he just eliminates him. Bret doesn't even really put up a fight. just a bunch of eliminations. I don't think there are any storylines that were built here within these eliminations. No real memorable moments. But I like the concept, you know. I think if you have a bunch of guys that don't have any matches on the card, put them in a battle royal for a big trophy.
For a trophy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they should do this year on the pre-show trophy. Or something. Just get a big trophy.
Well, it's not just trophy, but they say like there's actual money prize as well, although they never say how much. You get some money.
Maybe we should have had the big giant check presentation at the end like they would do in Pride.
Yeah. Maybe it would be for like $50.
Yeah, there you go.
A gift certificate.
A gift certificate.
The Harveys.
The Harveys. Bad News Brown, the big winner at WrestleMania 4.
Yeah.
Bob Uecker leaves to go find Vanna White, who was the other celebrity. What a lame show-long storyline we would get here. Bob Uecker's search for Vanna White.
You couldn't get, what is his name, Pat?
Sajak.
Pat Sajak?
No, he was too busy.
Okay.
Howard Finkel explains the tournament and that there are time limits for all of the rounds, and they bring out Robin Leach to read a proclamation. He was from this show at the time called Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. Not to be confused with a shitty Good Charlotte song.
Yeah.
And he kicks off the tournament by reading from a scroll.
Yep.
Great that they landed this guy. Robin Leach.
Yeah. Did you sense that the caliber of celebrity decrease?
Vanna White was actually a pretty big name at the time.
Yeah.
But Bob Uecker and Robin Leach... A bit of a drop-off, I would say.
Yeah, and who else?
That was about it, wasn't there?
Gladys Knight, I guess.
Gladys Knight was there to sing the America the Beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
The tournament kicks off with our first two of 14. Jim Duggan against Ted DiBiase, who is accompanied by Andre and Virgil. And Ventura is going through all the brackets here and how DiBiase could end up meeting Andre eventually. I immediately, as these two locked up, remembered... Our favorite Dave Meltzer reference a few months ago when we were talking about Loki and having the best tuxedo match in history.
Yeah,
and Dave bringing up Jim Duggan and Ted DiBiase having a tuxedo death match in Mid-South.
Oh, okay.
Unfortunately, Ted wore a tuxedo to the ring but did not compete in it.
No, and Hacksaw was not wearing a tuxedo.
He was not wearing a tuxedo at all.
Underwear.
Just an atomic drop sent DiBiase to the floor. Duggan ran into a boot in the corner. Duggan went for a sunset flip and got a two count. And it ended when DiBiase hit a... Andre clocks Duggan with the rest back turned. DiBiase hit a knee to the kidney, and DiBiase pinned him at 5 minutes and 3 seconds as the crowd booed here that Ted DiBiase was advancing. And I forgot to note off the top, we are going to have some comments from Ted DiBiase on this show later on.
Oh, my God.
Discussing this tournament.
Oh, great. How did you score that?
I went back to a 2002 interview that Jeff Merrick conducted with him.
That's incredible.
Great, great score on my part.
Well, you got Jeff Merrick and Ted DiBiase on.
Yes, that. Yes.
That's quite the score.
Yes, and how Ted DiBiase is the answer to an interesting trivia note.
Okay. I look forward to that.
So our first of second of 16 matches, and a lot of them very short.
Yes, they were. I mean, the last match, these are all very old school, slow, cartoony heavyweight styles, meaning they're not that memorable. It's a lot of power moves, and it's the most basic moveset.
This was certainly an area, though, where if you are the NWA, it's like the in-ring product, it wasn't even comparable of how much advanced it was in the NWA. And I feel if I was a fan right now, at this age, I would totally... be enjoying NWA more than... It's just 3.5 hours of these big plodding matches. I mean, the great matches were certainly the exception rather than the rule.
Well, what would you say that the WWF excelled at instead of the NWA?
Characters. Mm-hmm. Characters and just the marketing of their talent and making it feel like the bigger show. Like you said it right at the top, WrestleMania felt like the big show. And I probably would have gone with WrestleMania 2 just because of the way it is positioned and marketed. Whereas the NWA, it did have this really kind of gritty feel to it. And I think they really struggled in terms of the character development, at least at the time, versus just kind of positioning themselves as we're the wrestling company.
Mm-hmm.
Next, we had the first of 8,000 interviews that Mean Gene Okerlund conducted on this show with Brutus Beefcake, which, what a coup to get this guy for an interview.
Oh, yeah. Jeez. I'm surprised he wanted to talk.
It better be fast, Gene. Fuck. So he was willing to do the interview. Are we going to do a Scott Putsky roll call? Because never have I watched a show with more candidates than this one.
Me too, man.
Brutus Beefcake is the first one.
Okay.
We're skipping the Battle Royal because I'm sure there were quite a few in there.
Yeah, yeah. Not enough profile.
But let's just go from now on. Okay. Brutus Beefcake, he looked like there was like this energy can was inside of his bicep. Like he just looked.
John was holding up a tall can of a
473 milliliter
giant energy drink. Yeah,
and I mean this guy was just like protruding. That if someone scared him from behind and he moved quickly, I think his veins would burst.
Right. Oh yeah.
And he might have been drunk for this promo.
Well, this is the style of the 80s promo, right? Everybody looks so intense and exaggerated.
He tried to rhyme something that didn't rhyme, and it ended with, "Honky Tonk Man, I will be the new champion."
That kind of rhymes.
Sure. Man and champion. Great. And he threatens to cut Jimmy Hart's hair if he gets in the way.
Oh, God. All right.
Next up, Dino Bravo, accompanied by Frenchie Martin, taking on Don Morocco, who is accompanied by superstar Billy Graham.
Would you safe to say both nominees for Scott Putsky Awards?
Oh, dear. Bravo, Morocco, and Graham, would all say here. Three candidates out of one match, one singles match.
Graham was wearing a shirt, and he wasn't really wrestling.
I think Graham would be more than accepting that he was still...
I'm just saying, it's hard to gauge, whereas these guys were on...
Are we only judging in-ring performers?
I mean, I think you should judge based on what grabbed your attention the most and what had the most high-profile exhibition.
As jacked as Dino Bravo... I mean, Dino Bravo was a legit, like, strong man. I mean, he was...
That doesn't... disqualify him from his...
No, it certainly does not. But just looking at these two, it was like Don Morocco looked like the bigger of these two.
He did,
here.
Yeah, he did.
Bravo didn't have the kind of body that just screamed at you, and
And he wasn't as tanned, and I think like being tanned and oiled up kind of makes it seem like you're a little bigger too. But okay, so you're saying Don Morocco is a...
Is he the only candidate we're putting in from this match?
I would put them both in.
Okay, then they're both going in.
Okay.
Ventura says he was the originator of tie-dye because Morocco and Graham both came down with tie-dye shirts. These were big at the time. Right. Or at least Billy Graham would believe they were big. And what a knock here, because they talk about Billy Graham being a former WWF champion, and Ventura says, yeah, but he beat an easy champion. Huh. A little slam of Bruno there. And Monsoon, I love it. They weren't on great terms with Bruno in 1988, but he's going into the Hall of Fame.
Oh, no, he's okay. I hear Arnold's going to induct him.
Yeah, they sent out the press release
this
week.
Didn't he say a bunch of shit about Arnold?
Who?
Bruno.
No, Bruno and Arnold are friends.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they were...
I could have sworn, like, in one of those things that we reviewed, he like, started talking shit about Gold's Gym and all that.
I don't think that was Bruno.
Okay.
No. There's an Irish whip and a slam to Bravo. Goes for an arm drag, misses Bravo's arm as he goes for this arm drag, and just takes a bump anyway. Bravo misses with a knee in the corner. Then Morocco attacks the knee. Does this sound riveting? It was. Graham chases off Frenchie Martin at ringside. Then there was a spinning toe hold, and Bravo kicks him out of the ring and gets the advantage. Hits a pile driver to Morocco for a two count. Then goes for another where Morocco back body drops him, and we got a double clothesline spot. And then Morocco goes for a jumping forearm, but takes out our pal Jimmy Corderas. And Bravo hits a side suplex. Corderas gets back and counts three on top of him, but calls for the bell at 4:54 and declares Morocco the winner by DQ. And we got a replay of Dino pulling Jimmy Corderas in front of him and thus shielding him. And Jimmy Corderas, one of many bumps he took on this show.
Oh, he took a lot of them. I didn't even know this was Jimmy, actually, because he looked very young with a mullet, believe it or not.
He was a young Jimmy Corderas, like here in 1988.
Curly, like a curly, like Howie Mandel mullet.
He was all over the show. I can't even keep track of how many matches he officiated here. Mm-hmm. But a big Jimmy Gordera story still to come here.
Ooh.
Later on.
All right.
Bob Uecker's in the back. Not much of a match here, right?
No.
Don Morocco advances.
The finish was a bit of a mess. One of many DQ and non-finishes on this show.
There were quite a few. Bob Uecker's in the back with a Vanna update and then brings in the Honky Tonk Man and Jimmy Hart. Warns Jimmy that he might get a haircut, and Honky Tonk Man makes fun of Bob Uecker's career batting average, and he doesn't care if he has to backstroke up the Mississippi to keep his title.
All right.
All right.
Not the only backstroking.
I was hoping you would have paid as close attention as I did. Two backstroking references on this show. We then go to Greg Valentine, accompanied by Jimmy Hart, against Ricky Steamboat, and Steamboat comes out with his son, now NXT performer, Richie Steamboat.
This is the WWE debut of Richie Steamboat.
The Little Dragon.
Yeah.
In a gi.
Yes. But he was he couldn't have been more than a few months old here.
Yeah. Very, very young son. And this was...
scared the shit out of him. Brought him out into this crowd and just like this kid's just crying, terrified.
What a great video package you have. Whenever he's finally called up, he's been developmental for like 25 years now.
Actually, this should be in his Titantron.
Just holds him up, and it's like Simba, where then Ricky's holding up Richie at the age of like 26.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe Ricky will carry him out for his next WrestleMania.
Yes. He'll hold him in his arms like a creep. Wow.
The match begins. He passes the Little Dragon off to his wife, and there's a deep arm drag by Steamboat that Monsoon calls excellence of execution. And Steamboat goes over to the top, skins the cat, and then hits a drop kick from behind and a roll up, which got messed up here as Valentine just timed it poorly. And then out of nowhere, away, a Barry Blaustein shout out from Jesse Ventura saying that my friend Barry Blaustein feels that Steamboat's going to win the whole thing.
Yeah, I didn't know what the connection
was. He
was
his agent, I believe.
Oh, he was.
I believe
Barry Blaustein was doing that back
then? I think so.
Oh,
I think so. They were at least close friends, if not an agent-talent relationship.
Right, okay.
But very surreal here to hear a Barry Blaustein reference here out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Valentine hits a bunch of chops, knees to the body. He goes for the figure four, but then sent into the corner. From there... Valentine goes into the turnbuckle and grabs Dave Hebner as he tries to stop them. And then Monsoon is defending Steamboat for grabbing Hebner and tossing him away. And Steamboat hits a high cross that Valentine rolls through and pins Steamboat at 9 minutes and 11 seconds. And Steamboat is complaining about hooking the tights, but Greg Valentine advances.
Yeah, This was not a terrible match. I mean, I thought obviously the best of the night thus far, as you'd expect, but I just didn't think it was anything.
This was also a match Ricky Steamboat's talked about in the past, where after his big win at WrestleMania 3 the year prior, shortly after that he had requested some time off. He was expecting his son, and the company was kind of annoyed that they had, you know, pushed this guy, had the big match with Savage, put the title on him, and then they had to have Steamboat drop the title and take time off. So then he comes back, and he's put here on this card, and they beat him in the first round, and Steamboat never understood why, you know, had he won this, you would have got the rematch of Steamboat Savage in the second round, and they decided to forgo that, and he always took that as that was their kind of punishment for him taking time off.
You're really punishing the audience in your own show here.
I mean, that would have been easily the best match on the show.
Absolutely.
Even if they had gotten 10 minutes.
And a great story to tell with Savage on his way to
On his way to winning the title, he beats the guy he lost to last year. Mm-hmm. So, I would definitely criticize the choice here of not too many people, I think, looking back fondly at the great Savage Valentine classic of WrestleMania 4.
No.
So there you go. Okerlund is in the back with the British Bulldogs, Coco Beware, and Matilda, who had been kidnapped by Bobby the Brain Heenan and the Islanders, but had since been returned. I have never laughed so hard than watching Dynamite Kid with a big grin talking about how his dog has come back. Talk about a guy who in his mind was just thinking, fuck this. They call it, Dynamite describes Matilda as a certified weasel dog. And they basically, have Coco then cut a very caffeine-fueled promo, or something else was fueling this.
Yeah, yeah, I was going to say. I don't think they had many energy drinks back then.
Yeah, they had other forms of energy, yeah. Uppers and downers. So there you go. We're going to have a tag match over a dog.
Yep.
Over a dog. The shampoo match with Booker T and Edge would be, I think, similar.
I'd say a dog is a bit more important
ridiculous
than shampoo.
Remember that same WrestleMania, Hunter and Jericho had the match involving that dog. Remember Lucy the dog?
No.
It was when Stephanie had some dog, and I think they like ran it over or something in the buildup.
What?
It was terrible.
Was this the WrestleMania match? This was not, right?
Yeah, this was leading up to their Toronto match.
Was a dog in that?
There was a dog. Okay. Go search Chris Jericho, Lucy the dog.
Have we reviewed that show?
We've reviewed the WrestleMania, but not the Raw. Oh, and where I believe they ran over a dog.
All right.
Next up in the tournament, the natural, Butch Reed with Slick, taking on Randy Savage with Elizabeth. Savage and Elizabeth, color coordinated throughout this show, represented by the color blue in this opening match. Mm. And Reed had the advantage, hit a fist off the second turnbuckle, then starts talking to Elizabeth, and Savage tosses him off the top and hits his elbow drop, 4 minutes and 9 seconds.
Quick match.
Yes.
Quick win.
Very, very quick. Savage moves on.
I thought Ventura, I really enjoyed him in his heel commentator role. As soon as Savage wins, Ventura says, that was all due to Elizabeth distracting Reed. She was probably showing a bit of leg.
I love Ventura and Gorilla. I love these two together. They were just, and a lot of it was just being young and watching these shows. I just always loved these two together.
I think it's enjoyable even now. Yeah, he's just funny.
Euchre is in the back with a WrestleMania program, and he's continuing to look for Vanna. Bobby Heenan walks in with the Islanders, brings up the dog kidnapping. Euchre, all he had to do was hold the mic here, and he couldn't even hold it in front of Bobby Heenan.
I was going to say, he could have taken some miking lessons from John Pollock.
Jesus, like, it's very simple.
Point the mic to the subject.
Fucking Bobby Euchre here. And Heenan just cuts a promo, and then he exits. One-man gang with Slick. I imagine Slick just stayed out here after the Butch Reed match. Right. I mean, geez, these Slick and Heenan and Jimmy Hart. Boy, were they busy on
absolutely.
This show.
What I noticed is, like, everybody on this match had managers.
Yeah.
Oliver Humperdinck was there.
Yeah, Oliver Humperdinck with Bam Bam Bigelow was out to take on the OMG.
Yeah.
Soon to be Akeem.
Yes.
The African Dream. Gang missed Bigelow in the corner, and then Bam Bam Bigelow.
Hold on a second. When Bam Bam came out, did you listen to the music?
It was awesome. Very Bam Bam Bigelow inspired.
What the hell is this? This is like a saxophone theme and sounded like a late night talk show theme song.
Well, yeah, it's,
Was this just an edited version that we got, or what?
No, that was his music at the time.
This is saxophone music?
Yeah, he didn't have that ominous bam bam theme till later on.
Who thought to put this music to this character?
Well, who thought to put Oliver Humperdinck with, like, this much more suited Oliver Humperdinck than it did Bam Bam Bigelow, the guy from Asbury Park, New Jersey, who they tried to push here as kind of the local favorite.
Yeah, they really did.
From New Jersey.
It's odd trying to watch Bam Bam Bigelow wrestle as a babyface. He's doing all these like silly cartwheels and shit.
I loved Bam Bam Bigelow when I was younger. I always thought he would become just such a huge star. I was like, because to me, he was like the first big guy I watched who was like, look at all the stuff this guy can do. He could do moonsaults. He could do a fucking cartwheel here. I just love Bam Bam Bigelow. I love the tattoo. I love this guy.
I think all that's great, but the way he was doing these cartwheels in this match, it just made him look like a clown. Like, it had no effect whatsoever.
I enjoyed
it
a lot.
He'd kick a guy, and then all of a sudden he'd do a cartwheel and kick a guy again.
Yeah.
It just looked silly.
That was my first, I guess, my outrage was at like the age of 11 when Lawrence Taylor beat Bam Bam Bigelow in the main event of WrestleMania 11. I was this is just stupid. Lawrence Taylor is never going to be coming back here, and this guy's got to stick around. That was my first transition, I think, into criticizing.
Okay.
It's like, come on, why are we putting over the outsider?
You got to make the crowd go home happy. That's who they paid to see.
No, I guess so. Anyway. Guess what? Bam Bam Bigelow didn't win here either. Didn't do too well at WrestleMania's. There was a mid-ring crossbody that looked rather rough.
Yeah, Bam Bam does these like splashes from the ground, and he tries to get air, but he actually like doesn't, and he just kind of tippy-toes into these splashes.
Yeah, so there were a series of headbutts. Slick pulled down the top rope, so Bigelow fell to the floor, and then Bigelow couldn't get in time to beat the count. They went all of 3 minutes, and then they declared that One Man Gang won the match by countout.
A real mess. A bunch of shit happened at the end again. A lot of these finishes are just... There's so many flat finishes. Like, I can't really tell you... the main event, I suppose, but it's outside of that, all these endings just seem so nothing. Donald Trump here was sitting through this entire show.
I know.
Show.
Donald Trump sat through this whole show at ringside.
I kind of felt bad for him. At least I was able to, like, stop and, you know, break it up, but...
He paid for this.
Yeah, he did. He bought this whole thing, yeah.
Got what he paid for.
And, like, it's not like he can take a break either, because he's, like, right in front of the
Right against the hard camera. It'd be very noticeable. Donald Trump leaves after One Man Gang, Bam Bigelow disaster.
Couldn't yawn. Couldn't, get up to look around. God, I had to stay focused.
Okerlund is with Hulk Hogan to cut a Hulk Hogan promo.
Oh, boy.
Says, fee-fi-fo-fum, Andre. And he says for the past year he's been questioned about his win at WrestleMania 3 because it ended in controversy. And he talks about how when he slams Andre tonight, the fault line is going to break and just cut this insane promo.
This was...
As the world sinks, he's going to put Donald Trump and all the people on his back. He's going to be dog paddling. And then he backstrokes his way out of frame. This was
all
just
right,
crazy.
Well, no, this is some story about how Donald Trump family, there's going to be a flood in New York, and Donald Trump family would be hanging onto the top of Trump Tower in a flood, and Hogan would be there to backpedal his family, Donald Trump's family, to safety.
They realize that when I get Andre the Giant cinched up in a launch position, when I slam him through the Trump Plaza, brother, from New York down to Tampa, Florida, the fault line is going to break off. And as Andre the Giant falls into the ocean, as my next two opponents fall to the ocean floor and I pin them, so will Donald Trump and all the Hulkamaniacs. But as Donald Trump hangs onto the top of the Trump Plaza with his family under his other arm, as they sink to the bottom of the sea, thank God Donald Trump's a Hulkamaniac. He'll know enough to let go of his materialistic possessions, hang on to the wife and kids, dog paddle with his life all the way to safety. But Donald, if something happens, you run out of gas, and all those little Hulkamaniacs run out of gas, just hang on to the largest back in the world, and I'll dog paddle us, backstroke all of us to safety.
Oh, and thank you, Hulk Hogan. Let's get back to action. Wow.
This is perhaps the most fucked up Hulk Hogan promo I've ever heard in my life. It was awesome.
I would speculate, but I would have to add the word allegedly. So that is what I thought of this promo. It was insane. Then we go to Rick Rude, accompanied by Bobby Heenan, against Jake Roberts. These two had been feuding on television after Rude was hitting on this woman at ringside, which turned out to be Jake Roberts' wife. And Rude cuts a promo, takes his robe off. Safe to say Rick Rude is amongst the candidates.
Sure.
Oh, absolutely. I looked crazy. Yep. Jake comes out to his Hulk Hogan training montage music, and they exchange scoop slams. Roberts is working on the left arm, controlling the match until Rude comes off the turnbuckle and knocks down Roberts, and then applies a rear chin lock. Crowd was just completely dead. Not to say that they were very alive prior to this match.
Oh, they came alive for the boring chants.
There were wear down holds by Rude. He applied probably the longest reverse chin lock I've ever seen in the history of watching wrestling. Eventually, Roberts hit a jawbreaker to get out. Roberts starts a comeback with about 2 minutes left, and Rude blocks a DDT and hits a gutbuster. And Monsoon, in building up the drama, says, "Well, we are well past the 10-minute mark when there were 40 seconds left to go. Rude goes for a pin in the corner. The bell is sounded at 15 minutes and 15 seconds. They didn't even hit the time cue nor come close to it. And there was nothing dramatic. There was no, like, near fall right at the buzzer. There was no countdown clock, nothing. It just ended. And then they explained to everyone it was a draw, a time limit draw." This match, I didn't like
this
at all.
Terrible. Whereas the previous matches were either just, you know, inconsequential or, meaningless,
I thought this was the first match of the evening to actually offend people because of how long it was and how little excitement it provided. It was just really boring.
And you had two really good workers here, and still, they did nothing for me.
What must have Donald Trump thought sitting in the audience? This crowd is chanting boring.
He probably thought it was boring.
Yeah.
Afterwards, Roberts grabbed Damian to put on top of Rude and explained that a one-man gang will get a bye in the next round. Oakland's with Vanna White with the tournament brackets.
My favorite segment of the entire show.
Just showing the brackets or showing Vanna?
Vanna White analyzing. Oh,
this was great. She's introduced as the most famous letter turner in the world and says she's having a great time. She doesn't know who Bob Uecker is. Vanna, what do you think of Hulk Hogan and Andre? How's that one going to go down? Oh, Hulk's so nice. I like Hulk. Hulk. She'd just say the name and then Hulk. A thought. Doesn't agree with Ted DiBiase's philosophy on life that you can buy anything you want. And with Savage, she thinks it's great that a female person is behind Savage.
She said a woman person.
A woman person.
I'm glad that there's a woman person. Gene Astor, is this exciting, Vanna? And in the most dry, fake tone, it is exciting. I'm having a great time. Like, I'm almost convinced that she's a robot, and that's why she looks pretty young at her age still, and she can walk all those steps. She's doing a robot's job, flipping those letters. But I wish they made her a regular analyst, because this is some great in-depth commentary. The Fighter should hire her.
Yeah, she'd be great.
Five rounds with Vanna White.
Yeah. I like George St. Pierre. He's so nice.
That's nice. I like the Ronda Rousey that there's a woman person.
A woman person out in there.
Yeah.
Then, we needed to take a break from this tournament way, because there's a grudge match coming up. You ready for this grudge bout between Hercules with Bobby Heenan against the Ultimate Warrior?
You can call this a Scott Putski Award grudge match.
I think that would certainly be true. How many are we up to now? We got to be up to like 6 or 7 candidates now.
That's it. We'll do a roundup.
88 was just a ridiculous year.
This is quite the year.
Both of these men had competed in the past in a world class, and Ultimate Warrior just recently debuted a couple of months prior. Warrior runs down the steps and down to the aisle. This could have been a great WrestleMania moment had he tripped. Warrior just no-sells the shoving of Hercules, and then they had a collar and elbow struggle. He's no-selling these clotheslines by Hercules before finally going down after a third one. Crowd, I think there was a pin drop in the third row that I detected. Warrior tries to drop him throat first on the top rope, but missed. Then Hercules sends him over the top, but lands on his feet and pulls Hercules down. Hercules gets the advantage, goes for the full Nelson, but cannot lock his fingers. Then he kicks off of the corner, Warrior does, to try and land on top. Think of the Austin Bret Hart finish at Survivor Series 96, except done shitty. And they go for a pin. It's like a double pin where Warrior puts his shoulder up at the count of two and gets the win at 4 minutes and 37 seconds. God, did this suck.
Yeah.
They couldn't even put over Warrior in like a fucking squash here.
I didn't get that. I didn't get a lot of the booking on the show. Anyway.
Hercules attacks him after the match and is choking him with the chain. Warrior stops him and starts swinging the chain to clear the ring. And no description I love better than at the end of a grudge match on a pay-per-view, hearing the announcer say, "No definite winner here. This will have to continue."
Well, I think they did give Warrior the win.
Well, they did give him the win, but then Monsoon said no definite winner here.
Well, yeah.
The fuck did I just see here?
Well, I mean, I think it just means, like, he didn't beat him. He just beat him.
Oh. It's kind of like the new philosophy in WWE. Like, The Miz can beat Cesaro, but he's got to do it, like, 25 times before it's really cemented.
Mm-hmm.
Then we got an intermission. Remember when pay-per-views used to have intermissions?
I didn't get this part.
Oh.
What happened in the intermission?
You didn't see Gene Okerlund and his associate?
No.
Oh.
I missed this. This wasn't there.
It's Okerlund with this woman who, I swear to God, was like a statue, who just stood next to Gene Okerlund with a WrestleMania baseball cap and shirt as Gene wore the same thing and talks about how It's the WrestleMania hat and t-shirt combo that you can order now, along with a souvenir key tag and program for $29.95, and it asks people to mail in your credit card information with expiry date to WWF headquarters, and we will make the appropriate charges to your credit card.
People used to do that.
Foolishly.
Yeah.
Would you ever mail your credit card information?
I'd probably...
A WrestleMania hat?
No, I wouldn't buy one of those hats, but I mean, I'm probably pretty sure I've ordered stuff through the mail before. Yeah.
Monsoon and Ventura then go over the tournament. They show Sugar Ray Leonard in the crowd, and boy, did this show feel old when Ventura says he's just coming off that Marvin Hagler fight. It's like, holy Christ. And then there was a video on the history of Hogan and Andre from when they started the angle leading into WrestleMania 3, DiBiase trying to buy the title and enlisting Andre to win it, and then delivering it, and of course the big angle from the main event on NBC. And that would kick off the second round of the tournament with Andre the Giant, with Ted DiBiase and Virgil in his corner, taking on Hulk Hogan.
This is the big rematch.
Huge rematch. Yep. And it begs the question, how can we get a match out of Andre when he has nothing left?
Mm.
Which was sad at this part, but Andre really was struggling at this point in time in his career. Hogan just runs into the ring and gets attacked before the bell. And Monsoon noted that Andre looks awesome. And Hogan knocks Virgil off the apron. Andre gets tied into the ropes, and Andre takes a punch. He's down to one knee and dizzy, elbows by Hogan. Andre with a choke, some stomps, and Hogan powers up to his feet and out of this chokehold when Virgil gets on the apron to distract the referee. Hogan goes for a slam, but DiBiase hits him with a chair shot to Hogan's back, which would be a spot that we'd see the 180 of later on in the show. And then they fight over the chair, and then Hogan and Andre each hit each other in the head with chair shots, and the bell is called at 5 minutes and 22 seconds. Both That's men it. Disqualified and eliminated from the tournament, and they were so confident that this was a great idea, they didn't even announce they were eliminated to the live crowd. They just had Monsoon explain it on commentary rather than Finkel announce it. I think they were scared the crowd would just leave once Hogan and Andre were eliminated.
Right, right. I could see that. I could see, I understand why they needed to get Hogan out of the tournament to make way for Savage. You know, they couldn't job out Andre either, but what a disappointing finish to this. The match itself, Andre could barely move. Hogan is just, this was very, very disappointing.
Yeah, so, the terrible match, and I mean, WrestleMania 3, you had the conclusive finish, and it was such a great built-up match. The main event, you got that huge angle. With this, it felt like there was no payoff to it, and it was just, they clearly wanted to send people away happy here, because Hogan pretty much knocked Andre down, chased DiBiase and Virgil up the aisle, where DiBiase just threw Virgil to the wolves here, and Hogan suplexed him, and then Hogan came back, did his whole posing routine.
He slammed Andre.
And slammed Andre, so.
But at this point, like, it felt kind of sad when he did it, because you compare the reaction this pay-per-view to the reaction last time, and it wasn't 1/50th of the pop it was last year. It was just like, hey guys, I didn't win this match, but you know, I could still do this, watch, boom. No one gave a shit.
And as well, pretty much doing his whole post-match deal here with the crowd here, and pretty much doing everything minus getting the win here. We got a slam, the pose.
Ventura was awesome. He's like, he's standing there like he won the match.
Like Ventura was so great
like
here.
Like, he's this idiot just posing, even though he lost.
Which would be hilarious a few moments later when Ventura would do the exact same thing.
Well, Ventura wasn't competing.
Okerlund is in the back with Randy Savage and Elizabeth. They have now converted to pink, and says that Hogan is a cheated man, but not a defeated man, and says that one half of the mega powers will win it all. And Liz says, I believe he is. And Okerlund tells her, keep smiling for inspiration, Liz.
Liz is, she was great at looking concerned. That was like her look.
Next tournament match was Don Morocco against Ted DiBiase. DiBiase comes out alone here. Morocco runs him into the post before the bell and has the advantage from the start. And then DiBiase comes back in the ring as Graham is threatening him with a cane.
Do you realize we've already been talking for an hour?
Holy Christ.
This is a long, long pay-per-view.
Are you tired of me yet?
No. I'm tired of this show, for sure.
Oh. Well, don't tell the listeners that. Maybe they're
Why not? I'm sure they're probably tired.
Tired of WrestleMania too. Or tired of this show?
No. WrestleMania.
Oh. Well, we're only at the second round,
That's
Wei.
What I'm saying.
A lot of people still alive here.
It's already been an hour.
I think that Don Morocco might pull this one out.
All right.
No, he doesn't.
Let's
he loses.
Do it.
DiBiase went for this back elbow off the second turnbuckle, drops Morocco on the top rope, throat first, and just pins him at 5:36. So DiBiase is going to the third round, which they explain the importance of, because with Hogan and Andre eliminating themselves, DiBiase now gets a bye to the finals.
Mm-hmm.
So a very big win here. I was stunned. Don Morocco was not going to the finals.
Nope, but he could still win an award at the end of this. He could still win.
Like a pool where you get your entry money for second place or something?
No, I meant the Scott Putski Award.
Oh, well, yeah. That award he would certainly be up for. Bob Uecker, he can still not find Vanna White. Oh, I hope they find each other. And he's worried about her being kidnapped as Demolition and Mr. Fuji walk in. And they explain that they are going to hit the Strike Force members in the head. Axe starts cutting a promo, staring off screen at another camera before he realizes, no, this camera, moron, the one in front of you. And
could have used the floor director.
Yeah. Bob Uecker makes a Halloween joke and then says he'll never eat sushi either.
That made no sense. What did that have to do with anything? He just looked at Mr. Fuji and he's like, okay.
What do I know about Japanese people?
There's a Japanese man here in this frame. What do they do? They eat sushi. Okay, well here's a sushi joke.
Howard Finkel announces that the one-man gang has also received a bye in the next round, and he will take on the winner of this next match, Greg Valentine against Randy Savage. Instead of Savage Steamboat, we got this. Valentine drops an elbow, a shoulder breaker, and tosses Savage over the top to the floor and sends him into the barricade. Monsoon here is getting ahead of himself, talking about, man, what an interesting match Greg Valentine and one-man gang would be in the next round. Ooh, dream matches here at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Valentine is choking Savage from the floor. Tries for a figure four, but Savage gets to the ropes and then makes a comeback, hits a body slam, and then an axe handle off the top and gets a two count. And then Jimmy Hart is on the apron. Savage reverses, hits a vertical suplex, goes to the top, but then gets hit in the gut coming off the top. And Valentine then goes for another figure four. Savage rolls him up with a small package and pins him at 6:08 as Monsoon says the audience is going bananas.
Were they?
No.
Okay.
They were going silent. This had to have been one of the worst crowds in WrestleMania history. Maybe the worst.
Perhaps, yeah, but I don't necessarily blame them. I thought these matches were just so nothing.
Okerlund is with Vanna White. You would think that Uecker would communicate with Gene Okerlund at some point during these 3 hours, who is regularly with Vanna White pretty much in the same area.
Yeah, I guess.
I don't know. She says she is not hiding from Bob Uecker, but she's never heard of him. And Gene Okerlund is stunned by this news. And they go over the latest tournament results. And, yes.
Analysis.
Vanalysis. More great analysis from Vanna White. Honky Tonk Man defending the Intercontinental title against Mr. Interview Brutus Beefcake, who we had Honky Tonk Man accompanied by Jimmy Hart and Peggy Sue. And Beefcake gets rammed into the turnbuckle, misses an elbow, Honky Tonk Man with the heat. The crowd actually booed Honky Tonk Man. One of the few reactions on this show to any character was to the Honky Tonk Man, at least as a heel. And the crowd was booing him. Honky Tonk Man goes for the shake, rattle, and roll, but knees Beefcake instead. Then he goes for it, and Beefcake grabs the ropes. They were clearly out of position for the first attempt, and Honky Tonk Man just takes the bump with Beefcake standing up. Beefcake hits a back body drop and then a sleeper hold. Hart gets on the apron and he takes the megaphone, hits Jimmy Corderas in the back of the head, and then Corderas, in falling, smashed his chin into the mat and legitimately knocked himself out cold.
Whoa, really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, he discusses this. And it's on, they've discussed it now that it's a story that Jimmy Hart knocked him out cold, but it was actually Jimmy that knocked himself out cold on his impact by his chin going into the mat. I was looking at here, I was like, this guy looked dead.
I thought,
and then he was legit out.
Yeah, I thought he was just doing the gimmick.
No, he was out cold here.
Did he have a part to play in the finish?
Well,
I guess.
Yeah, I guess not.
Yeah, probably not.
Anyway, well, Beefcake here.
Does Jimmy talk about this in his book?
I believe so, yes.
Where can people get that?
They can go and order The Three Count, My Life in Stripes as a WWE Referee, available on Amazon.com.
Isn't there like a launch party sometime this
week? Yeah, I think so, at Shoeless Joe's at 276 King Street West, Thursday night at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, isn't like Thursday or something?
No, yeah, okay. I think we're both going to be there, aren't we?
How are we going to do Impact if we're going to be at the launch party?
Well, his launch is at like 7 o'clock.
Impact starts at 8.
When do you start Impact at 8?
Maybe never, but yeah, still.
Okay.
Maybe
they'll play it at Shoeless Joe's.
Yeah, I doubt that. I'll take Jimmy's launch party any day.
Well, the referee is out cold. Beefcake has applied a sleeper. So he lets go, and this idiot starts cheering like he's won. I don't know what would have prompted him to think he had won this match. Yeah. There was no bell. There was no referee to tell him to stop. Nothing.
I thought the match was still going on.
Beefcake just... Anyway. Beefcake then grabs his scissors, because he's going to knife somebody. And he starts cutting Jimmy Hart's hair. Jimmy just sells it huge. Peggy Sue dumps water on top of Honky Tonk Man. Corderas, still out here. By the 9:10 mark, the match is over. They announce that Beefcake has won the match by DQ. Again, he jumps up and down celebrating. I don't know why. You've won by DQ.
Well, he didn't win. Oh, he did win. You're right. Yeah. He did win. Well, he's happy that he cut off Jimmy Hart's hair.
Great. I didn't care for this match too much.
There were so many non-finishes in this, and
yeah, like up and down this card, like
the way they didn't non-finish was not even like exciting or anything. It just like no build up to any of these finishes. It just, you know, here's the time limit. It's run out. Okay.
Yeah. It's like today we'll get like a non-finish, you know, for an important match is usually because, well, they've got all these pay-per-views and they've got to keep programs going. At this point, it was like these shows are really positioned to be like climaxes of
this
stuff.
This is WrestleMania.
And it's like, yeah, like a few in the tournament I get doing those kind of draws, but throughout the, like a title match, it's like, why is this match being booked then?
Yeah.
What's the point? Euchre's in the back with Andre. I could listen to Andre cut promos all day long. I thought he was so great here. Talks about how he is the only pro wrestler that is still undefeated. He was paid to get Hogan out of the tournament, and he did. And calls Hogan the ex-champion with just this evil, maniacal laugh and says, Hulkamania is over. And he grabs Euchre by the throat and just throttles him.
A classic scene.
I loved Andre here.
Classic Andre scene. Do you think that was ad-libbed, the choking?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe it was. I don't think Andre was getting any scripts.
I wonder if you could have expected it.
Oh, well, he sold it great.
He sold it great.
This
yeah.
is such an iconic memory I have of the Bob Euchre choke.
They use it all the time.
Yeah.
In WrestleMania
yeah,
highlights.
It's great. So, Andre loved his promos here. He should have been on commentary.
He should have.
Another non-tournament match was the Islanders and Bobby Heenan against the British Bulldogs and Coco Beware. And Heenan comes out in an attack dog outfit. There was no bell to start the match. And Dynamite starts off with Tama Tonga, who slingshots Tonga into the corner. I would have been happy just watching Dynamite Kid and Tama here. They had some very good chemistry here. And the Islanders are kind of an underrated tag team during this time period. There was a crucifix by Bulldog to Haku for a two, then a military press to Tonga. Jesse Ventura then starts examining Bobby Heenan's outfit, noting to Gorilla, kind of looks like a Chinaman. Does he?
Yeah.
Is this what...
I don't know. I had no idea what he was referencing.
I had no idea the connection here of anything here.
Well, yeah. I mean, we were all born with attack dog jackets, yeah.
You gotta be prepared, I guess, for anything.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't get this at all.
Heenan comes in just like the cowardly manager. He'd come in when someone was down and just stomp them, and as soon as they regained their composure, he'd run away and tag out. The Islanders got the heat on Coco Beware. Coco had like these tights with like the letters WWF on the back in just different colors. Just looked like very...
Yeah, and they had to blur them out.
Oh, did they on yours?
Yep.
Oh, I had an old tape of this, so none of that stuff was blurred out. Heenan gets sent into the turnbuckle twice, and then he's down. Everyone runs in. The Islanders then get the advantage. They hoist Heenan up and drop him on top of a downed Coco Beware, and Bobby Heenan pins Coco at 7 minutes and 32 seconds, and then the Bulldogs chase them away with Matilda. So the dog nappers win this one.
Whew. Yeah, yeah, there you go. Another finish that really comes out of nowhere, I thought.
But this was building to the enticing Bobby Heenan and Coco Beware showdown.
Oh, okay.
Two WWE Hall of Famers.
That's true. Yes.
Howard Finkel. Look at that. On this show, Coco Beware is in the Hall of Fame and Randy Savage is not. Hard to justify that when watching this show. Yeah. Howard Finkel then directs the audience over to Jesse Ventura, who poses for the crowd and they applaud here. Jesse just plays total babyface here. The crowd's chanting Jesse.
What was the point of this?
To me, watching this, it was like they had to have been at least teasing him coming out of retirement, because he said that later on in the show at the closing moment with Savage in the ring. Maybe they thought maybe Jesse could do another run, but ultimately did not. Finkel then announces that Ted DiBiase has a bye to the finals, so we get our one and only third round match, the one man gang with Slick against Randy Savage. Boy, I wonder what the Vegas odds were on this match. One-man gang, Ted DiBiase. That'd be an interesting match in Gorilla's world. Savage and Elizabeth have now gone to black for their outfits.
Right, yes.
This was a lot of... imagine packing all these capes if you were Savage. Like, these were elaborate-sized capes he would wear out. I mean, this wasn't like your Austin Aries deal. These were like picnic blankets.
This was his big moment.
Yeah, four big moments.
Yeah.
He grabs One Man Gang by the beard, jumps over the top to guillotine him on the top rope, and then Gang just hits shots in the corner. Deafening silence from the crowd for this match. One Man Gang goes for a splash and misses, then misses Savage in the corner. There were shots from Savage, tied him in the ropes, and then goes to the floor. Savage hits an axe handle off the top to the floor in One Man Gang. Sorry, I forgot what the finish was, and I just remembered here what it was. Wade's just going to be furious here.
I remember. He uses a cane. He uses Slick's cane. One Man Gang
is One Man Gang the worst attacker ever to use a cane. Savage just missed. He missed Savage on like four attempts in a row.
Well, he made sure he kept hitting him, especially when the referee turned around and finally looked, because he basically got himself DQ'd
at 4 minutes and 13 seconds. We got a DQ to set up the final. So a bye and a DQ set up the final.
Telling me you couldn't job One Man the fucking gang to Savage clean on his way to the title match?
Well, it is a gang. Wouldn't be realistic to beat a whole gang by yourself.
The booking on the show is just so lazy, and another flat finish.
This was the one that puzzled me beyond. But this guy, you're putting the title on this guy.
Donald couldn't have been enjoying himself at all sitting here through all this shit.
I wish we could have had Donald Trump on this week's show. I should have called him.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Savage is moving on. And afterwards, One Man Gang, he goes to hug Slick in the ring. And clearly this was the spot. But Savage was on the floor. So One Man Gang had to hold this hug for like 30 seconds until Savage finally got to the top rope and hit a double axe handle. So Gang fell on top of Slick for the big spot.
He just likes hugging.
I guess. He's a One Man Gang of love.
Yeah.
Okerlund is with Vanna White. She's excited and she's going to ringside. And then as soon as she leaves, like Pokeroo, Bob Uecker runs in, but he just misses her and says that she's written me letters. Someone named Vance White. And Okerlund says, no, this is Vanna White. Ugh, the worst.
Crickets.
Fucking all show long, that's our payoff.
That's
Vance White, because Vanna sounds like Vance. Fuck this.
Ugh.
Fuck this. All right. Strike Force Demolition.
Maybe it was Dana White.
That would have been funny.
Yeah.
Strike Force against Demolition for the tag titles. Demolition were the heels here with Mr. Fuji.
Demolition always scared me as a kid, and they still kind of scare me because like they look like middle-aged men just dressed in face paint and S&M gear. Like if you were to catch your uncle on the weekends, maybe at like some weird sex club
fetish ball,
you look like this. He looked like these two guys.
This was their answer. This is the WWF's answer to the Road Warriors. And if I had been presented this, I was like, this is going to suck. Yeah. But Demolition got over.
Yeah, no doubt.
They worked, which was a testament to them, because you're right. This gear was, even by 1988 standards, was
not exactly weird. Like not exactly intimidating. More, well, scared me, but like for different reasons.
Yeah. So Monsoon was complaining about their outfits. It's like, do these meet regulations? Like these spikes in their trunks and all this stuff? And Jesse's like, oh, these are the outfits they've always been using, Gorilla. What's the problem? Strikeforce double-teamed them, but then Demolition got the heat on Santana in their corner. Very slow match. Santana hit an elbow to the back of Smash's head, legal elbow to the back of the head, and then Axe pulls Santana back. There's a flying forearm by Santana to Axe, and that Ventura says he learned in the Mexican Football League, the MFL. Hot tag made to Rick Martel, who hits a series of drop kicks, got a Boston Crab onto Smash, but then Santana attacks Axe on the apron. Santana then goes after Fuji, to which Axe comes back. Another cane shot. Back-to-back matches with cane shots, no less. And hits Martel. Ref misses this one, and Axe gets on top and pins Martel for the win at 8 minutes and 2 seconds. New tag team champions.
There you go. Yep.
What a match. And then our main event. Match number 16 of the day.
Yeah.
Holy Christ. Yeah. This show is becoming a fucking commercial for Clash of the Champions. Finkel welcomes out Robin Leach, who brings down the Winged Eagle Championship that he'll present to the winner. Shows it off to Donald Trump, who has endured all of this entire show. Bob Uecker comes out as the guest ring announcer. And then the guest timekeeper is Dana White, who gets a reaction here.
They built her up huge on this show. Like she was the main event here.
Yep. Ventura notes that Ventura actually calls attention to the fact of how much of a bigger reaction Ventura noted Uecker did not get in comparison to Vanna White. So right. We knew who they were there to see. Anyway, Vanna White gave Bob Uecker a kiss on the cheek. Then he stumbled on his wording as he was introducing the championship match with Ted DiBiase, who had Andre in his corner against Randy Savage. Savage and Elizabeth in white, and Savage here doing a Nick Diaz, went to throw a punch before the bell at DiBiase and then didn't hit him. So the match begins. This certainly had the potential to be a great match. Didn't get too much time, though. Only went 9 minutes and 18 seconds. Basically, Andre kept grabbing the leg of Savage, so Savage sent Elizabeth to the back to bring out Hogan, who's standing by and sitting at ringside for the match. And then DiBiase has the advantage, goes for a sleeper hold after Savage misses a top rope elbow drop. Hogan, behind the ref's back, runs in and hits DiBiase from behind with a chair, to which Savage then goes to the top rope and hits an elbow drop and wins the title at 9 minutes and 18 seconds. Jesse Ventura loses his shit at the unfair tactics of Hulk Hogan, who just came in here with a chair shot. And I guess this played off DiBiase attacking Savage with a chair earlier in the night. But Randy Savage wins the one-night tournament, wins the WWF Championship, and they do a big post-match celebration with Hogan, Savage, and Elizabeth, which was actually, amazing as this sounds, by the time WrestleMania 4 was done, they had already planned out WrestleMania 5. They knew exactly where they were going. And the idea was, because Hogan was leaving for some time after this to do No Holds Barred, the movie, and the idea was there would be one moment here during the post-match where there would be a look that Hogan would get from Savage when he looked at Elizabeth or something. It's very hard to detect, but they were planting the seed even as far out as this point, a year out, and they knew exactly where they were going.
Did you catch the look?
It's very brief, but I think when there was one point where I think Hogan like puts his arm on Elizabeth or something like that, and then they would just continue to build it throughout the whole year before Savage made the turn. But I guess you could kind of say this past year's Mania, they knew they were going back to Rock and Cena, and that's really been built over the past 2 years, really, when you look at it. But they definitely knew where they were going here, and the post-match was well done, and Randy Savage wins the title.
Yeah, I thought the match really picked up once Liz went out to grab Hogan, and the crowd really got into this finish, and it made for a really nice moment to see Liz up on Savage's shoulders.
And kind of getting the endorsement of Hogan as the champion.
Yeah.
An interesting dilemma that they had was that, you know, they would put out their WWF magazine and have to, you know, to keep it timely, they'd do stuff in advance, and there was a big fuck-up where the magazine went out the week before the show, and it had Savage on the front as new WWF champion.
Oh, wow.
And they were so concerned that this is going to ruin everything. But an interesting lesson was that they did not panic. They went with the original plan. WrestleMania did like 585,000 buys, which was a huge success at the time. And something to learn, that it didn't throw anybody off.
Hmm. Okay.
So there you go.
Yeah.
WrestleMania 4, a very, very long show, 16 matches. Randy Savage wins the title. I thought one of the lamer WrestleManias in history. And you can vote with nostalgia and looking back on things from your childhood, but just watching this show as a whole in 2013, I'm giving this one a 2 out of 10.
I think conceptually, I enjoyed the show. I like the tournament idea at the end of the tournament, the person gets the title. I think that's cool. But I thought the execution of it was just, these matches are just so dull, and the booking of the finishes was just so either, I was perplexed at how many non-finishes there were, and, all the double countouts and everything. I thought it was a bit of a chore to sit through. I give it a 1 out of 10.
1 out of 10 from Way. Wow, yeah, I can't remember the last 1 out of 10.
What redeeming qualities are there from this show? I mean, the main event was okay. But,
yeah. For those curious, with how Clash of Champions did on going against this, of course, it featured the Ric Flair Sting match, and that show on TBS, it did a 5.8 rating, and Flair and Sting peaked at one point with like a 7.8 quarter hour, and I believe it was like the most watched segment in like TBS history. So it was a giant success. But the pay-per-view companies were really pissed that they did a head-to-head battle and basically told the two companies, we don't want this happening ever again. And then it happened again, WrestleMania 5 with another head-to-head with both in another funny story. But we mentioned there Randy Savage winning the title. That was not always the plan going into WrestleMania 4. The original idea was Ted DiBiase was scheduled to win the title, and in a weird roundabout way, Honky Tonk Man refusing to drop the IC title to Savage on the main event that we talked about last week led to them rechanging plans and ending up going with Savage. And Ted DiBiase is the interesting answer to a trivia question of someone who was, in this case, promised the WWF title and did not get it. He was also promised a run with the NWA title prior to this, and that was what Jeff Merrick asked Ted DiBiase about back when we had him on. We've had Ted DiBiase on many, many times over the past number of years. So here's Ted DiBiase discussing how he was promised both titles, including this one at WrestleMania 4.
Hey, Ted, we've only got a couple minutes here left with you. Really quickly, I once heard a story that is really interesting, actually. Is it true that you were the one man in the history of professional wrestling that was promised both the NWA and the WWF title but never received either?
Absolutely.
Can you tell that story?
That's a fact. I was promised them both. The first time I went to Atlanta, there was a lot of talk. They were thinking about doing this round robin deal where instead of leaving the NWA belt on one guy for like years, they wanted to try shifting it around to like maybe three different guys. And the three names that were out there were Ric Flair, Dusty Rhodes, and me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, political clout and what have you. I had guys like the Funks in my corner. Jack and Jerry Briscoe were in my corner. Bob Geigel was in my corner. But the Mid-Atlantic territory and Jim Crockett, you know, that had the power stroke. And when I went to Atlanta, Jim Barnett was the promoter there. And when I came in there, I was just told that to go over, get on that TV, and get over, and that things would work out, and not to say anything about the belt. And I never did. What happened when I got there is somebody had leaked it, and as soon as I hit the front door, I had people asking me when I was going to get the belt, and I kept telling them, I don't know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But what got back to everybody was that I was running my mouth about it, which wasn't the truth.
Right.
Somebody had leaked it, and I think intentionally, to bury me. So that never happened. And then when I went to the WWF, you know, when they did the big push with me at the beginning with the Lear Jets, the limousines, and all the Million Dollar Man stuff, at WrestleMania 4, originally I was supposed to take the belt. And you know, and they had never had many, you know, they didn't leave a belt on a heel.
No, they never ran with heel champions.
Time.
No.
But you know, and I won't get into a lot of it, but because a couple of other guys did a lot of whining about some stuff, and I just won't name any names because I don't do that.
I think it's pretty obvious who you're talking about.
In an effort to pacify everybody, they just said, well, you know, we'll create a belt for Ted, and so that's what happened.
Do you still have that $1 million belt?
No, they bought it, they paid for it, they've got it. I don't know what they're going to do with it. Maybe it's in their cafe on display. I have no idea.
So that's an interesting note.
Yeah,
could have. In hindsight, way, how do you think they would have done it had they put a heel over in this tournament in Ted DiBiase as they had originally thought? Because I think it's hard to argue with the success they had with Savage and how it built up to a huge match with Hogan the year prior. That was one of their best built feuds ever.
How would it have worked out?
I mean, had they gone with DiBiase? I mean,
I don't
think
know.
It's hard
to say because I don't know how often they've ended WrestleMania with the heel going over. I remember, like, I guess Austin, WrestleMania 17. So has there ever been another opportunity?
Hunter's kept the title as a heel in the past. Okay. I don't think it matters as much now, but at this time, I mean, the WWF was always kind of, you know, you had that babyface champion, and I guess they wanted to keep that formula going, whereas the NWA kind of liked having the heel with the babyfaces chasing. So
right. It
was just a different philosophy at the time. All right, we're going to head over now to your feedback before we get on out of here. Way is just spent. So let's chat about your feedback over on the message board, and Way, why don't you kick us off?
Sean Lane from Toronto. I was 17 when I first saw the show back in those days, and living up north, we didn't have cable, so the only way to see the show was after waiting for it to come out in the video stores. I remember how much I enjoyed this card, but other than the main event, this show does not hold up so well. The Battle Royal was forgettable with the exception of Bret turning face. Hercules vs. Warrior was as bad as you would expect, but you could see the Warrior starting to get over. Jake and Rude was good, but couldn't we get anything but a time limit draw? Heenan was the only good thing memorable in the Bulldogs and Coco Beware versus Islanders and Heenan match. Bobby could make a turd, could take a turd and make it smell like roses. I was a fan of the heel version of Demolition, so I was really happy to see them take the tag titles from the sickeningly sweet as apple pie team of Strikeforce. The tourney itself was mediocre, other than the final match with DiBiase and Savage. Macho Man was still was and still is my favorite, so seeing him win the title will forever be my all-time number one markout moment.
All right, we then go to Jim Powers, to Chris in Ottawa. Hey gang, given the massive event that was WrestleMania 3 and the huge rating for the inaugural edition of the main event, WrestleMania 4 arguably occurred at the WWF's peak in the 80s, which makes it all the more peculiar why the event was so poorly booked and took place in a venue that had less than 20,000 people. WrestleMania is supposed to put the cap on the last year's big angles. Instead, we saw 20 performers compete in a meaningless battle royal for a trophy no one has ever seen before and would never see again. And besides Hogan and Andre, no other participants in the 14-man title tournament besides DiBiase had been part of the main event program. Was Vince preoccupied with other business between Mania 3 and 4? I can't fathom why this show had so few personal issues associated with the matches. To make things even worse, we were forced to witness Donald and Ivana Trump sitting in the front row facing the hard camera and repeated cutaways to their smiling plastic faces like they were the fucking King and Queen of England. Not even the great Bob Uecker could save this train wreck. I award the show 2 Brutus the Barber beefcake packages out of 10.
Hi, John and Way from Sean... in St. Albert. St. Albert, Alberta. I'm a long-time listener, but first-time poster, so go easy on me. I will always fondly remember WrestleMania 4 because it was my first ever pay-per-view that I got to see as a kid. I was 11 at the time, and it was a month before my 12th birthday. My dad knew I loved watching the Saturday night's main event and WWF whenever I could. He ended up surprising me with tickets to watch WrestleMania 4 via satellite on the big screen at Sask Place in Saskatoon. I was always a huge Macho Man fan as a kid, and to be able to watch the tournament that changed the wrestling landscape was so exciting for me. I was hoping and praying that he might win, but never thought he would actually win because of stupid Hulk Hogan. Seeing Macho Man continue through the tournament and actually beat the evil Million Dollar Man to win in the end is still one of my most favorite wrestling memories of all time. Also watching the 20-man Battle Royal being a Hitman Hart Foundation fan, seeing him clock Bad News Brown with the trophy after losing was classic. Of all the WrestleManias I've ever seen, this will always be my favorite. Getting to watch it with my dad and to this day still laughing about how excited I was as I jumped around with my Macho Man figure when he won the title days after the event. I just want to say that I love all your podcasts. I think you guys are hilarious and you bring back many great memories, so thank you.
All right, let's go to Chris, who writes from the UK. I found Trump Plaza to be very underwhelming as a venue. Why did they go back a second year? Well, we explained that earlier. It was like Trump Plaza made a big play to get the event both years, and you know it was definitely a financial incentive as well to go there. First hour seemed to have about 10 matches. Was a 14-man tournament a bit overambitious? Battle Royal saw the start of a Hart Foundation face turn. Of the first round, Jake and Rude was the only match that captured my attention. Really good work by both guys. Savage and the Million Dollar Man were the standout workers. Found the main event to be lower than expected quality-wise. Even with the passing of the torch to Savage, this event was still all about Hogan. Only he could milk the crowd after for a double DQ. The whole card felt rushed. Luckily, Gorilla and Jesse held it all together. Great chemistry that has really never that has rarely been replicated. On the whole, a mediocre event. Looking forward to a review of Raw or Way in New York City, if it can happen. Was going to pass on Kaiju Big Battle after a transatlantic flight in ROH. I suspect jet lag will defeat us. Well, there you go. Many people going to WrestleMania weekend.
Jay Hunter, I wouldn't wish this 226-minute slog called WrestleMania 4 on anyone. It's the ultimate collection of short but aggravatingly boring nothing matches. I hope John Tour, the 15-minute time limit, draw a new corn shoot. The Coliseum home video version had an extra 6 minutes of footage, which included wrestlers' promos from their hotel rooms. Heenan received a special package, which was presumably his dog bite jacket, and an intro video featuring quick cuts of wrestlers, including a terrifying close-up of Warrior's bicep. Steamer coming out of this newborn son in a matching... Steamer. Coming out with his newborn son in a matching little dragon outfit has to be the greatest babyface entrance ever. Pun gleefully intended. Despite her fake blonde wig, I thought Sensational Sherry did a fine job as Piggy Sue. However, it was demolition. It was a demotion, as 4 months prior at the Survivor Series, she was the lead heel in the women's division. We wouldn't see a women's match on pay-per-view for over a year after that. Any idea why WWF were so stop-start with women's wrestling?
Sometimes they were into it, and other times they weren't. I mean, it's kind of been a consistent thing with them. Carmine writes, despite the truly lackluster matches, this has always been one of my favorite manias. I'll always remember going to the video store and seeing the two VHS tapes bundled together with a cardboard pop-out of Hulk Hogan in the middle. I must have rented it at least half a dozen times because in my mind I was getting the most bang for my buck because it was two tapes for the price of one. But enough nostalgia. Let me talk about this show as I see it now. From an in-ring standpoint, it's pretty much garbage. Savage worked his ass off, but that's about it. Bob Uecker on commentary and backstage was priceless as he's one of the few celebrity inductees to the WWE Hall of Fame that I actually don't object to too much. Gorilla and Jesse are great as usual, but to me the two highlights of the show are Hulk's batshit insane promo and about slamming Andre so hard that Trump Plaza collapses, and of course the story of Randy Savage. He won 4 matches in one night, and 2 of those were against wrestlers who had received buys in previous rounds. Talk about a way to make a guy a star. It sucks that Hogan had to do the run-in to make the save, but at least it started the ball rolling for the eventual Mega Powers storyline. A way better year-long build to Mania than either of the Rock Cena matches. Anyway, thanks for reviewing the show, guys. Like I said, it's always been a favorite of mine.
Alexander Rios from Miami. Since WrestleMania 4 actually predates me starting to watch wrestling, I actually went to watch what I could on YouTube, since I had never seen it before. I gotta say, those 80s production values, they drove me nuts. Imagine how Way must be handling it, the amount of times glare from the arena lights kept lagging onto the camera whenever there was a movement. It made me feel like I was watching an episode of American Gladiators again. Anyway, onto the show itself, and what is old is new again, because all the way back in 88, we had a battle royal that means absolutely nothing. So yeah, a tournament for WrestleMania, for the vacant WWF Championship. Feels like Survivor Series 98. But damn, 16 matches on this card? Good thing I skipped to the ones that were important, like Savage, Warrior, Rick Rude, and Jake Roberts. I loved, but fighting to a draw on pay-per-view is like ordering a pizza and then not being able to eat it. And Hulk Hogan and Andre fighting in the middle of the card, while it makes no sense to put it in the mid-card, at least it was short and sweet. Anyway, Savage won the title, and of course Hogan still had to photobomb himself into the angle, the eagle maniac that he is, and became Randy's tag partner, and the rest is SummerSlam history. 4 out of 10.
And finally, our last bit of feedback here, one of the least impressive manias to date. I would have much preferred a standard format of WrestleMania with the feuds of the day over the tournament format brought on by the twin ref scandal, which could have been saved off as a precursor pay-per-view to the King of the Ring months later. Jake Roberts and Rick Rude was solid but long. Hercules and Warrior served its purpose, and Demolition taking the straps off Strikeforce remains one of my favorite tag team matches from my childhood. However, I would have much rather seen Hogan versus DiBiase or Hacksaw Jim Duggan versus Andre the Giant. Don Morocco could have gained revenge on Greg Valentine for the attack on superstar Billy Graham. I can't speak for everyone, but I would have loved to have seen Ricky Steamboat in a one-on-one match with Harley Race. Simple wrestling philosophy. Keep it simple, stupid. At the end of the day, the everlasting memory of this mania will be more on the facial expressions of Bob Uecker while being throttled by Andre more than epic matches that stand the test of time. Just another mania whose hype exceeds its quality. P.S. Eek to Jimmy Corderas on the bump to the noggin. Yes, which we discussed earlier. So there you go. Everyone's feedback from WrestleMania 4. I think most people in pretty much agreement of WrestleMania 4. I don't think there's anyone that looks back on it as one of the pillars of WrestleMania history.
No.
So, Wei, we got through it. 16 matches. Mm-hmm. You were fearing we might have to break this review into two parts.
I thought this would have been the first two-parter review.
Well, we made it through the entire WrestleMania 4 experience, and we are going to get on out of here. But looking ahead to next week, Wei, has your mind changed since we started this podcast?
No, we got to do it, man. We got to do WrestleMania. It's WrestleMania month. We got one more until WrestleMania this year. So
we're going to do one more, and then WrestleMania is done. For this season.
Yeah, we got to fit three a year is not bad.
Is that how many we've done?
Yeah. We did 15.
15. Oh, and then 4. Yeah. And we'll do next week. What are we doing?
We are doing WrestleMania 5.
Whoa, from Trump Plaza.
Right back to Trump Plaza.
Wow, I mean, it's like we haven't left.
Donald must have enjoyed it enough to welcome them back a second year because, yes, WrestleMania 5 featuring...
Featuring the match, Randy Savage against Hulk Hogan. This was one of the best built-up programs in WWF history. This did a monster number on pay-per-view at the time. A tremendously built-up feud. And that is what we are going to review next week. So we're not leaving Atlantic City, New Jersey. We are going to be, which is just a stone's throw from MetLife Stadium. So yeah, apropos.
We'll actually be going to... New Jersey.
I might be going there twice in April.
Oh, really?
I'm going to get my fill of New Jersey.
Oh, you're going to go for the Sonnen and Jones card.
I think so. Cool. I might be. So that is going to be coming up next week. So we will put up a thing for the feedback later on. And lots of stuff to look forward to, guys. I think that there is going to be a new show every single day on our site leading into WrestleMania.
Wow.
That I am doing.
Okay.
Later this week, today being Wednesday, tomorrow on the site, I'm going to be joined by our good pal and former WWE creative member, Brian Mann. And Wei, you're more than welcome to pop in if you want. We're just going to be looking ahead to WrestleMania. And he's also launching a new podcast.
Cool.
So you're welcome to join us tomorrow morning if you'd like to.
Like Thursday?
It might be, I'm talking to him on Wednesday and then the interview will be up Thursday morning.
So you've already talked to him as well?
No. I'm going to be talking to him in a few minutes.
Oh, gotcha.
Yes.
Okay.
Then of course, Review and Impact, is coming up on Friday with Nate Milton, of course, and as well, the MMA report this week. This is a doozy. This is one to check out. Jeff Osborne and Paul Lazenby, I talked about the segment before. They were both part of a group called Bodog Fight, which, for those of you familiar with Kelvin Ayer, this was his MMA group that he funded. And boy, the stories. This was like the WCW of MMA. Just tons of money, tons of people steering the ship and ultimately going out of business. But boy, do these two have stories and they are not afraid to share any of them. So that is coming up on the MMA report this week. Then, as well, later this week at some point, we're going to be chatting with Gabe Sapolsky about WrestleCon. And on the Lost Sunday night, we've got our Hall of Fame edition. Trish Stratus will be live on the show as well. Bruno Sammartino will join us. So that's Sunday, 11 Eastern. We are back to our normal time slot. With Dan Lavransky, Jason Agnew, Dave Meltzer will join us on TSN Radio. So much stuff coming up, Wei.
When's your next vacation?
When you and me leave for WrestleMania.
That's not a vacation.
That's my vacation.
It's a work trip.
Yeah, we leave pretty soon. We're leaving just over a week.
What do you do to relax? How do you de-stress?
I watch WrestleMania 5.
Okay.
And I drink.
All right.
That's what I do. I'm looking forward to WrestleMania. Those are the kind of vacations I look forward to. It's a work vacation.
Yeah.
It'll be fun.
Yeah, it will.
Are you excited?
I am.
I want you to be pumped, Wei.
I feel that
wrestling has really turned in your life. I feel you.
What do you mean?
It's like this. It's like this girl that you want to break it off with.
What?
But why do you say
that?
Don't want to.
No, at this point, it's more like a marriage. More like a marriage that I'm very faithfully committed to, even though it's been many years.
Well, you're going to spend a whole weekend with your wife in New Jersey wrestling.
Yes.
Not
wrestling.
Me.
No. Yes. My wife all weekend in many forms. She'll be wearing many different outfits.
She will be, yeah. From Kaiju Big Battle to whatever else is going on. Lots of stuff that weekend.
No, that'll be fun.
So there you go. We'll be chatting much more WrestleMania stuff next week leading into the big show. So we will chat with you next week. Of course, liveaudiowrestling.com is where you can go for all of our shows, all of our audio, daily updates, TV reports, everything you have covered there as well. You can go follow Wei on Twitter at Wei0937. That's the number zero, not the letter O.
Yeah.
Little confusing for some. And you can follow me at Law Radio or at I Am John Pollock. And Mr. Ting, WrestleMania 4, musical selection. What is something that, you know, when you go back and think of WrestleMania 4, what is a song that's going to best epitomize this 14-man tournament from Atlantic City, New Jersey?
How about... Heaven is a Place on Earth by Belinda Carlisle.
Any particular reason for Belinda Carlisle?
No.
Because I don't think New Jersey's ever been accused of being heaven on earth.
Oh, is that right?
I'm sorry to our New Jersey listeners.
Yeah, there's no reason.
It's what we hear.
Although I'm sure they'll agree with you.
I don't know. Ahmad might be disputing.
Yeah. I'm sure he thinks it sucks.
No, that's not nice. All right, here we go. Out with a Belinda Carlisle, the random end to our show. So thanks to everyone for listening. We will be back later this week with 4,000 shows.